Moonlight pours through the broad skylights above the Kepler High School pool and onto the back of Calvin Owens, captain of the Kepler High swim team. He cuts quiet laps through the water, training vigorously for the Pocahontas County swim meet, just 4 days away. A window over the stacked-up bleachers is propped open by a duffel bag containing a change of clothes, evidence of Calvin's trespassing in pursuit of a few dozen more practice laps. He breaches the surface and clings to the edge of the pool, panting. He reaches up with trembling, tired fingers and peels off his goggles and cap, then lays his head down on crossed arms, attempting to catch his breath before pushing his luck for one last set. And for a moment, he is surrounded with silence, floating in the waters that would be his proving grounds in just a few short days. He pushes his nerves aside, and granting himself a moment of weightless serenity, Calvin Owens exhales a long, contented sigh. And then he is pulled violently below the surface of the water. And now the silence of the gym is nearly absolute. There's just the soft rustling of the pine trees outside and the small ripples that remain on the surface of the pool, which lap lazily against its edges. And then a splash as Calvin resurfaces, gulping air into his burning lungs as he lunges toward the ladder out of the pool. He leaps onto the edge and scrambles up the side of the bleachers, his body aching with exhaustion, and yanks his bag out of the propped open window, swinging his leg over its sill. But before he makes his escape, his curiosity consumes him. He pauses and surveys the waters below. His mind cannot comprehend what it sees. The surface of the water grows convex, lurching upward from the center of the pool and pulling away from its perimeter. It grows slowly like this until it forms a mound that reaches 10 feet above its former surface, and then, without warning, this shape begins moving in Calvin's direction. The window slams shut as Calvin springs outside. He hits the ground running and vanishes into the trees that surround his school. The nearly full moon over Kepler, West Virginia, illuminates this scene from its ambivalent place in the twilight sky.
Sucked into a portal. I'm going all the way from West Virginia to... Oh.
West Virginia, yeah.
Oh, man, I'm being sucked, too. I'm going to West Virginia, too.
We're both being sucked.
We're being sucked.
Dad, are you being sucked?
No, yeah. I wouldn't admit it if I was.
And I'm the portal master who made the suck.
Griffin, why did you transport me to the state I'm already
well,
in?
Well, technically, you're 45 minutes east. Or so of where you are. So that's exotic.
There's all those warrants too, Juice. You can't really cross state lines.
Yeah. And now you're in pepperoni roll country, baby.
Ooh. This is pepperoni roll country right here.
Sure.
The official snack.
I'm there. I'm living it.
So it's Max Fun Drive, and it's our first episode kind of back in Amnesty. What we officially know now is season two. And hey, who here remembers what Amnesty was all about? Because it's been 3 months?
It was all about a young woman named Aubrey Little.
And her journey and sort of side characters, sort of ancillary characters.
Yes,
supporting
who were there to
her
make her look
quest.
Good.
Sure.
And also, here's a really fun thing, because you often see this like when you go from pilot to season. I can't remember what Aubrey's voice sounded like, so it's going to be like completely different now, probably.
Also, because you're sick, it's going to... Now Travis has the episode one sickness. Would you all like a quick refresher on what this is all about, and then we can talk about what the Max Fun Drive is, and then start doing the episode?
Yes.
I agree.
you all are in Kepler, West Virginia. It's the setting for this story, where all of you have kind of been collected. Ned, you lived in town already. You run a sort of local cryptid museum called the Cryptonomica. And Duck, you've lived here for... Has Duck lived here his whole life?
So, yeah, I think so.
So far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Ned works at the Cryptonomica. Duck works at the Monongahela National Forest as a park
ranger.
And
we're buddies. We're friends.
And you're buddies? Well, you're all friends now, I think, or at least casual acquaintances.
No, apparently I'm a sidekick to Aubrey.
That's correct.
I was goofing. Come on. You're all important in God's eyes. And Aubrey, you are a traveling sort of magician starting her career who was brought to Kepler when she developed actual magic powers, and you...
That's the twist, right? Because before now, she was doing stage magic, but then what's that? Actual magic? No one's ever done that before in a story. Y'all welcome.
Actual practical magic.
Yeah.
So you all were... you all sort of came to know Mama, who is the proprietor of the Amnesty Lodge. It's actually just Amnesty Lodge. I need to stop saying the Amnesty Lodge. That's like calling it, like, the Motel 6. That's weird, right?
Wait, is Amnesty Lodge a chain? Are there other Amnesty Lodges around?
No, there's just this one, and it is it plays home to a number of monsters who hail from a world called Sylvain, which is accessible.
We still need to come up with a better word than like abominations and monsters. Alternative beings.
Alternative.
I thought we had bomb bombs.
Bomb bombs. It's all terrible. Voted down. Which Sylvain is accessible through a stone archway, which is in the middle of the woods. And every 2 months or so, when the full moon, around the time of the full moon, these big, nasty monsters called abominations come out. And it's up to the Pine Guard to defeat them quietly, because nobody else can know about Sylvain's existence. Because what would happen if you found out there was a world full of monsters that was connected to our own? There would be chaos.
I would feel very satisfied, very vindicated.
Sure, there would certainly be people like that, but the reason for the secrecy that the Pine Guard operates under is because they are worried about, you know, war. And so y'all slayed an abomination, and won the day, and Mama sort of disappeared on some sort of secret mission. Duck sort of had a conversation with Minerva, who is his invisible friend. It's visible to him. She's visible to him, but to nobody else. And we learn that she's somewhere. She's exists somewhere. And in the last scene, Ned, you found out that Kirby posted the video of the real Bigfoot, Barclay, fighting a bobcat, which is a small cat. And I'm very sorry. I didn't know. I confused bobcat and mountain lion. It happens to the best of us.
I knew that the whole time, and I thought you were doing that on purpose. Like, it was a monster version of a bobcat.
I thought it was an oversized.
There we go.
I think you would even call it a Robert cat, because it was
a Robert cat. The monster fluid got in the bobcat, turned into a monster. Okay. Any questions before we hop in?
How long has it been since the...
It's been 2 months. We're kind of getting to the next sort of monster cycle, which comes every 2 months or so. So we're going to do like a quick catch-up scene with all of you, and then not go 5 episodes before getting you all together. I'm going to do that sort of after we do like a little catch-up, because I want to know what your characters have been doing in this place for the last 2 months.
So what time of year is it?
It's October.
Spooky.
Yeah, the spookiest month historically. Let's talk about the Max Fun Drive though before we do the story.
Well, so there are monsters in the world, and we need your support to stop those monsters. How do you do it?
Right.
You go to maximumfun.org/donate, and then you become a member, and with your monthly pledges, we take that money and we turn it into dead monsters.
Yeah, we have monster sword. Not the cool monsters. The cool monsters can hang.
If they're chill,
and like some of them are. I saw a vampire the other day. He was listening to Train on his car radio and just enjoying the air conditioner. I was like, yeah, you can hang
fine. Yeah,
heavily tinted windows, obviously.
Heavily tinted windows, and I put my glaive away. we're going to talk more about the Max Fun Drive, but let's get into it.
Maximum
but
Fun.
Just go to maximumfun.org/donate right this second.
Let's start with Aubrey. Aubrey, when last we saw you, you were kind of banged up from the monster encounter. It's been 2 months. I imagine you have recovered since then. And it's October now, and in the last 2 months, Mama has not returned yet from whatever mission she embarked on. But with her sort of last letter, she implored you to stay at Amnesty Lodge and help them in their plight while you sort of discover the truth of your magic powers. So I am curious to hear what Aubrey's been doing for the last 2 months, and then in there maybe we can find like a scene that we can do.
She's been binging Netflix, just really taking some her time, not doing much.
Watching Stranger Things for like strategic tips and stuff?
No, mostly just like cooking shows and documentaries. No, she has been practicing.
Zumbo's Just Desserts. I'm pretty sure Zumbo is a cryptid, because no human can make cakes like that.
I picture, like, with Barclay's help, like, setting up, you know, kind of straw men, you know, and doing some, like, target practice, you know, flinging spells and trying to really control it and being able to do it without having, like, the spreading danger and really trying to find, like, where the line is of the power and, like, how much you can rely on it.
Okay. So just practicing your magic ability. Is it going well?
I would say it is passably well. Here's another thing I want to, just like last time, I want the characters to use the restroom. I also don't want this to be like in Doctor Strange where it's like, oh, now I get it, and now I'm super awesome at magic.
No, yeah, like, I think that's probably how it would work, right? Like, yeah, it's not something you just like, oh, now I'm a master magician.
I would also say that maybe in there she's been like learning about Sylvain, and she's been learning about the alternative people, the alternative beings in the lodge, and so she's been maybe cozying up to Danny a little bit as a bit of like, now tell me about them, now what's going on here,
that kind all right of we thing. we can do that scene. Like, I think that would be good. I think you doing target practice is would be cool too, but I think that you just like having a conversation about Sylvain and stuff might be good. So how about this, you and Danny are in the woods, just not too far from the lodge. I think it's probably in sight. There's a creek that runs along behind the Amnesty Lodge. Behind Amnesty Lodge, damn it.
Uh-huh.
And the two of you are out there just sort of hiking around. I think Danny's sort of been helping you get acclimated to Kepler, first and foremost. Like, this is a town that you have not lived in, and so you're sort of still trying to wrap your head around the landscape and sort of what the town's all about. And the two of you are looking for ramps. Do ramps exist in October? I think it's a springtime food. But because of the magic from the gateway.
Oh, I thought you meant like sick, like bicycle ramps. We're going to skateboard off some ramps.
No, like the Tasty Onions.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's like an Appalachian delicacy.
Okay.
Okay, anyway.
There's a ramp festival every year.
There's a ramp festival, but I think it's in spring. But because of the magic of the Stone Gate, they also grow in October.
Could we also be looking for six skateboarding ramps?
Yeah, I think you're looking for both. Do you know...
Only if you have Jake Kulice with you.
I think Jake Kulice heard you were going out for looking for ramps, and he showed up with his shorts and his cool board.
Oh, Jake.
And his knee pads and helmet, because he's safe. And then Danny was like, no, they're onions. Barclay wanted them for cooking. And he's like, oh, well, I can't grind on those. And he went back inside, and he cried in his room.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You hate to hear that.
So the two of you are out in the woods looking for these stinky onions, you are talking to her about Sylvain.
Also, just a picture, I've been imagining this kind of, like, training exercise that's also become, like, a nervous fidget for her, where it's, like, a little flame on the tip of her index finger that she passes back and forth between index fingers.
All right, I dig that.
So kind of controlling.
Are you doing that right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you want to know from Danny about Sylvain?
Okay, so one more time, tell me again. You are a...
Well, I guess I'm Sylvain, like, 100%. There's sort of different types of beings over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but like a werewolf,
okay, yeah.
Vampire...
I know, I get what you're... See, those are your terms, and it's weird because you kind of have those terms because we... came over and you made them up, but I guess I guess a lot of us would be vampires, not in the way that, not like the, you know, Dracula type. I can't turn into bats. I can do some cool stuff, but like Yeah, vampire. Sharp teeth when I need them. And she, what's she have? I think she has a ring, and she takes that off, and you see her, like, her sylvan form, where she has those sharp teeth and kind of orange eyes. Not exactly like the two-fanged vamp that we kind of know about, but she transforms in front of your eyes. She's like, yeah, so vampire. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay, so this is a weird question, but is there any way to recognize, like, without someone taking off their accessory, say, like, oh, yeah, that's a Bigfoot, that's a vampire, that's a...
No, I mean, that's why they exist. They help us sort of live here. I mean, you don't need, like, a Voight-Kampff test on this. It's pretty much just the folks living in Amnesty Lodge. I feel like a lot of people saw Men in Black and then just assumed that there were, like, aliens and monsters walking. No, it's pretty much just us. It would be mm-hmm. tough to sort of... It's tough to survive in this world without a little bit of help, and Amnesty Lodge sort of provides that to us. So I think the most important thing you need to know, and I know you're curious about how the Sylvans work, but we can't really live without some sort of sustaining life force. And over in
like food?
Well, it could be food. There's traces of that stuff in there, but in Sylvain, we all sort of subsist on, well, Sylvain itself, on the planet. And
you eat the dirt?
No, we don't eat the dirt. We just sort of absorb its energy.
Photosynthesis.
Yeah, I guess if you want to frame it like that, it's a little bit like photosynthesis. And obviously over here, we don't get that. And so I think that's why you get a lot of the, you know, vampire biting, feeding, that stuff that has happened sometimes and has been kind of unfortunate and has painted a pretty bad picture of me and how I sort of live.
So do you have to bounce over from time to time and, like, recharge and come back?
She looks a little sad when you say that. She's like, I can't go back, Aubrey. I'm in exile. We're forbidden. Yeah. Once you leave Sylvain, you're not really allowed to cross back over. The springs behind Amnesty Lodge, the hot springs. Yeah, those have enough juice, I think, for a lot of us to keep going. So quick soak in there, and I'm good to go. So
would you want to go take a soak in the springs? I mean, I know we have to get the ramps. So if you don't, you know what? Never mind. Forget it.
She reaches down and grabs like there's two really close together, which is, I don't know how ramps work, but I'm going to say it's an uncommon occurrence, and she pulls them up. I think y'all have like a healthy bounty. She's like, no, that sounds great. Let's get these over to Barclay, get him working on that, whatever he's going to make. These things stink like hell, but I'm sure he's going to make them taste very good. And, yeah, let's go for a dip.
Sick.
Duck.
Yep.
Duck, it's been 2 months since the events, since the last hunt. What have you been up to? I think Minerva's still showing up on a fairly regular basis. I thought it might be interesting if through the two of you just like figuring it out, if she managed to find a way to show up at like a regular time, like, you know, 6:14 p.m. sometime in the evening, and I can leave it to you to decide, but just like that's now it's consistent. Now Minerva shows up and you know what time she's going to show up. It is not this like random visit thing. She now has a scheduled time.
She shows up, like, just in time to watch Wheel with you.
Yeah. She's dialed it in. She catches the back half of Wheel, and it's probably not for like a super long time, but like, what, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Probably in the evening. I feel like you said 6:14 kind of randomly, but I think that feels right. 6:14 every night.
All right. I think Minerva shows up at 6:14 every night, checks in. I think you still got Beacon, and that's what it is.
And I think Duck has been like he's still doing his day-to-day. I think he probably jogs places more often than he used to stroll, like trying to sort of casually get a little bit more physically fit. I think maybe in the woods once in a great while he'll sort of like practice with Beacon, you know, when he's sure no one is around to look, to sort of, you know, get knocked the dust off a little bit, but it's not like his prime focus.
Hey, he's got a fucking job.
He's got a 9-to-5, yeah.
Has that been complicated by the fact that you also kind of have started to embrace your destiny a little bit?
I think that he maybe has a sense of wanting to have things in order, you know, just in case. Would have to abandon his post for some reason, or God forbid something were to happen to him. I think that he maybe appreciates it more because it is also like a sort of bedrock of normalcy in a world kind of gone crazy.
How is your training going? I think it'd be cool if like you, Minerva, I think would be eager to train you. I think obviously she only shows up for like 3 minutes. It is a short window that she appears to you, but it's every day 6:14 to 6:17 she shows up and I think wants to sort of show you the ropes a little bit.
Yeah, and I think I see Minerva kind of as like his personal trainer and who he's kind of like blowing off. Like the reason he does this stuff is so he can tell Minerva like, "Oh yeah, I've been practicing like running and swords and stuff, you know."
Okay.
But it's not, you know, it's sort of like Minerva's there, she's like, you know, "Have you been training?" He's like, "Oh yeah, totally training, really, yeah, for sure, like really grinding it out."
All right.
Turning in all kinds of crush bone belts, you know.
Yeah.
God, how often can we reference crush bone belts from
as
EverQuest?
Often as I want, dude.
Okay. I think I'd like the scene, if you're cool with it, to be at some point during this 2 month span, she kind of stops taking the excuse of like, "Yep, training, great," and actually wants to like spar with you somewhere for her 3 minute window.
Yeah, and I feel like she probably kicks his ass like every time, and probably through that, towards the end of this period that we're talking about, like he gets tired of getting his ass kicked, which is sort of the prompting for him doing the other stuff, like for actually trying to get himself in slightly better shape and practice with a beacon or whatever. He's tired of getting knocked around.
Well, she's like a vision. I don't think she has any physical form.
Yeah, but he knows when he's beat.
Yeah, okay. I think all right, let's do one of these scenes. It's probably close to the end of this 2 month window because you've been training for a while. Where are you at?
I also don't forget I need to do my Destiny's Plaything role at some point.
Oh yeah, go ahead and do that. That's a good setup too. Cuz we're especially
sure, cuz if we're flashing back it.
Okay. Go ahead and do it and then we
can. Okay. For those of you, Destiny's, at the beginning of every sort of like thing, I have to roll to see sort of like what Destiny is going to tell me about.
It is a super cool mechanic. So we're using roll 20, not for sort of visual things. We're not going to put up like things that you won't be able to see. We're mainly just doing it so we can see each other's rolls. And I can see that Justin has rolled a 7 plus, what is it, weird?
Yeah, plus weird, which is actually -1.
Oh,
so for ducks. So
what do
it's
you
a 6.
What do you get on a failure for
something bad is going to happen to you?
Oh no! We just started.
Here you go. Here's a little present for you, Griffin. I've wrapped it and everything.
Okay, that's extremely good. Well, mark experience.
Okay.
Every time you fail a roll in Monster of the Week, which is the game we are playing, is you get mark experience. Out of curiosity, did anybody rack up 5 XP? Need
no,
to level up.
I just got one last time.
All right.
Yeah, that's my second.
Dad, where are you at XP wise?
You know, I got a couple.
This is a much simpler system.
This is such a simpler system. You gotta just do the shit.
I'm looking at all my notes. I think I
look at your character sheet.
Two.
Thank you.
I'll do your vision after this scene. We'll do the flashback and then we'll do your vision.
Okay.
So it's where are you at when you're doing this training?
Out back,
the Outback Steakhouse, like the parking lot, or like the kitchen.
There's a parking lot behind the Outback. No, I go out back of my house.
Okay, your apartment.
My apartment. There's a sort of common area. But there's only like 3 other apartments in the building, and I know when Mrs. Pearson usually packs it in at about. Earlier in the evening.
Now, what's your relationship with Mrs. Pearson?
Yeah, let's dial into that.
She is a sweet, older lady, former police officer, actually. So she's got a lot of great stories. Kepler's first female police officer, actually. And so she's got a lot of great stories about her time on the force, which Duck likes to hear. And he likes to she likes to think that she's checking up on him to make sure that he's doing okay, because she still hasn't lost the sort of protective nature that she developed over 40 years on the force. But I think they kind of look out for each other.
Damn, dude, we were just goofing. That's good shit.
That is real good shit.
Okay, so you're behind.
Wait, hold on. Slow. Who else is in the building?
I can tell you if you want.
There's Mr. Furley. Mr. Furley's there.
No, Mr. Tarkeesian, who runs the general store in town.
Justin, I have a fucking character list here in Scrivener. I'm having to update it. Mr. Tarkeesian?
Yeah, Mr. Tarkeesian.
All right. Runs the grocery store.
General store.
Yeah, I mean, it's a grocery store, general store, whatever. It says Kepler General Store, but that's sort of like a nod to nostalgia. You know, it's like a grocery store, a small one. You find those in small West Virginia towns where the big chains have not come in still. Like, if you go to a place like McDowell County, you'll find these like gas stations that are kind of like markets
and
gas station markets,
combination bait shop. A lot of the time.
A bait shop for sure.
There is a Pizza Hut in town. That is, I think, one of the few chains.
That's canon.
Yeah. Pizza Hut is not necessarily a grocery store, but I can see how if your only groceries were pizza.
Can you give me all the ingredients but not cooked, please?
All right. Is there anybody else in your apartment building?
The fourth apartment is unoccupied.
Okay.
Currently, you know, that's the problem with an area like this. Somebody moves out, it's not like we have an influx of people, you know.
Okay. All right. So it's somewhere close to the end of the 2 month span, like very, very close. I think like a week before the events of this arc. And you're behind the apartment building. It's 6:13. Sure enough, nobody's out there.
And Mr. Tarkeesian still at work.
Yeah, Mr. Tarkeesian still at work. Mrs. Pearson's hold up for the evening.
Watching the wheel.
She watches the news. She's 6 to 6:30. She's
watching the news, so you know that you're clear. And your watch rolls over to 6:14, and then, like, without a sound, there's no, like, there's Minerva, and she is standing in front of you, and she says, "Duck Newton, let's be swift, eh? Only a few moments. Are you ready to begin your training?"
All right, here's the first thing I wanted to show you. Check this out. And he jumps up in the air and kicks, and he says, "Is that anything? Because I did it and I felt like it was something, but I don't know if that's anything."
Well, why don't you try to do...
It's kind of like a half kick.
Yes.
I kind of jump up and do like a half kick.
It looked rad, and it might scare your opponent into maybe wavering for a moment, giving you an opportunity to strike them with your blade. But you've just taken up like one of our 3 minutes with it, so I think keep practicing, and let's see how it goes.
All right.
Why don't you roll to kick some ass? I think that'd be a cool way to like see how well you do with this training session.
It is really hard. I have my dice like in my hand. It's very hard to break the habit, but I will use your rigged game.
You were saying
11 points to kick this ghost's ass.
and, actually, you add your what is it? Body.
I'm looking
tough.
Add tough, which he is one. So that's a 12.
All right, I think this is great, because I think after like a few weeks of her, and I think the training is like you take turns, you swinging your blade at her, just trying to hit her while she kind of dodges out of the way, and then she has a blade of her own wherever she is that you can sort of see in the projection that she swings at you,
and I feel like because of the net magical nature of my blade, like we could. Like fight that way. Like I feel like I could have like a realist, even though she's spectral, right? Like,
so here's the thing. You are right. You have your blade is magic, but like you have hit her before, it just passes right through her. Because and
I meant the sword herself. Like I don't think it hurts her, but like I feel like her sword maybe we could like bounce off, or she like
here's how
just, like,
here's
light.
How we rectify it. I think it's okay. It you feel something when it hits her, but you it's not like in your hand, right? It's like your right. It's like your brain telling you like that's a hit, but you don't. It's Pop not like hit. It's not like the blade is stopped in the air. But okay. That has been sort of rare for you to actually get a hit off on her. And I think this time you stab at her and she dodges out of the way and you quickly like swing the blade upwards and you get a hit on her. And even though, again, like she's not tangible, I think she falls down. And this is like quick. This happens in like the span of a second. And she's laughing as she goes. And she says, "Oh, Duck Newton, you have been practicing. I see you're really giving in to the instincts."
Yeah, I've been feeling like I've been getting a little bit better. You know, I'm trying to put in my time and polish up a little bit.
She says, "Your skills are impressive, Duck Newton. More impressive than I expected them to get. There is a certain amount of, let's call it, help that you receive just for being the chosen one. But it seems like you've supplemented that yourself with doing a little. What did you call it? CrossFit?
Yeah, I'm still doing CrossFit. I went back. I'm not getting there every week, but I feel like because of magic, that's probably fine. And destiny, you know."
She says, "No, you're again the instinct that you received upon becoming the chosen one will do you well. There's no need to overexert yourself, Duck. We only have a few moments. How is it going with Beacon? Are you two getting along?"
"It's fine. It's fine. You don't. Just so I'm clear, you don't have any other like magical weapons stashed somewhere or anything, do you? I mean, it's going fine, but like you don't." That I'm pretty locked in, I assume.
She laughs and says, "Duck, there's no way for me to get you another weapon. That's the only one of its kind on..." And then she's gone. And then I think that night you're in bed and you're probably feeling pretty good about yourself. You got some good hits off. Why don't you mark experience? That's not typically how this works, but I think you did a great job training your bod and your skills. And so I think this would reflect that.
We have to assume, we could say that that's probably an assumption of like, since we have a lapse of time, there's probably a lot of failures in that time
yes,
period.
Exactly.
Reflected
mark,
by that.
Mark
that
84 experience.
So we're not playing complete Calvin ball.
Yeah, sure.
We're making up for lost fails.
I think also because y'all just didn't get very much experience that first arc. I mean, you probably failed a lot and didn't tell me, but
didn't roll a lot
yeah,
either. We're going to roll
true.
More, I feel like.
Definitely. I think that night you're in bed and you are asleep and you, and this has happened to you before, like you feel it coming on even though you're unconscious. And what does it look like? What do your visions look like?
Do you know, this is going to sound like a weird touchstone, but you ever see like rotoscoping? It's where they animate
yeah, sure.
over real people. It's like that, but like a little more monochromatic, like a lot of hues of like sapphire and green.
I like
and stuff
that
like
a
that.
Lot.
But that's what they look like.
I think you just see water. And I think you see, you don't really see any shapes in the water. I think your vision is a little bit too primitive for that. But you see this water and it's dark wherever this water is. And then you see your body, it's sort of like superimposed in this scene, in that style, and you are face up, and you are sort of, you look unconscious, and you are falling in this water.
Mm.
Ned.
Hmm.
Ned, what you been up to? I think just to set it up, because of the events of the end of the first arc, and I'm not sure if it was clear what happened there, but the video that Kirby posted was not your Wookiee costume, you like wandering through the woods. It was the camera still rolling, recording actually Barclay, actually Bigfoot, actually fighting a big monster bobcat that was infected with the monster fluid that made it real big.
But because of Ned's crummy camera work, there's still some doubt.
Yeah, it is still like one of the most convincing pieces of Bigfoot footage that exists out there, and that is why the Cryptonomica has been doing pretty well lately.
Yeah.
You have not you paid back the missing payments for your lease or mortgage or whatever, and you're doing all right. Not like rich, but like you are finally like making enough money to get by, which is it's probably been a long time since the Cryptonomica has been like that. So what have the last 2 months looked like for you?
They've been pretty good for Ned. He took all that extra money and bought some drones, and he
sure
what?
Yeah, he bought yeah, he bought why not? He bought some drones, and he's been cooking up a Mothman scam with Kirby. They had so much success with the Bigfoot video that he bought a couple of drones. So that's kind of been percolating on the back.
Is the Mothman the big scam thing you're doing, just to figure it out, like you have some sort of paper cutout of a Mothman that you attach to the drone and just fly it around the town?
Oh,
or
so much more elaborate than that. It's using a series of lights and phosphorescence and lasers. There's some lasers involved. That we haven't really put that in effect. That's been kind
just
of
to clarify,
the burner.
Ned was super behind on his rent, about to lose the shop, and he gets all this money. He's like, cool, finally drones.
Yeah,
bought drones. Okay. Yeah, well, paid off the rent.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
But you know, money means nothing to Ned. He has no concept of it.
How is it? How's it different now doing the Cryptonomica stuff while you actually have like a pretty frequent stream of visitors? I think it's mostly like hikers who are like maybe doing the trail, or
a lot of folks doing the trail. A lot of folks have been coming into town. It's actually, the success of the video has been kind of decent for the town in general.
Okay.
You know, because people have been staying at local hotels and eating in the Pizza Hut. So, you know, it's been kind of a boon for Kepler. It's still not up there with places like Canaan Valley and stuff like
sure.
that. But it's, you know, it's helped out.
Has there been any friction with you and specifically Barclay, I guess, at Amnesty Lodge for the fact that you put him on blast, kind of?
Yeah, and not only that, but I don't think they're too happy about it. I think there's some,
I'm going to say maybe Aubrey has done a little bit of damage control for Ned to be like, he didn't know. Yeah. It's an accident.
I don't think it was like a huge blow up, but I think Barclay was like, what the fuck, dude? This is like specifically not what we're going for here. So I want to do a scene with you, Ned, and I want it to be like now. I would like your catch up scene to be like kind of now, right as we're getting into the start of the arc. But what can we do?
Well, I have an idea. One of the projects that Kirby and I've been working on is trying to get the local TV station. See, you know, because we're in the National Radio Quiet Zone, you know, there's like no satellite TV,
yeah,
and no cable, but we do have a local TV station that basically is all you have in Kepler, WKWV, and they have agreed to let me do a late night monster movie show, like the old Chiller Theaters, right there at the Cryptonomica. We're gonna shoot it right there. And Kirby's gone out and gotten these cameras, and so we're putting it on Saturday nights. We're gonna call it Saturday Night Dead, up against Saturday Night Live, and we're just gonna show scary monster movies like Roger Corman and you know, all those old great drive-in movies every Saturday night, and we're getting ready for the first broadcast. We're getting ready for the first one.
Okay. Let's do this at the Cryptonomica. It's the day, it's like the morning before your first broadcast, and you're talking with Kirby about what you are going to do that night.
Okay.
Can we, just to get a little bit more interplay, can we also say, like, because I think that this would be an idea that Aubrey would be, the showmanship and the thing. She's not in the scene, but maybe she's like in the background setting stuff up. You know, she's also there.
Yeah, this is at the crypt. Is it shot at the Cryptonomica or is it shot at the TV station?
Yeah, no, shot at the Cryptonomica.
All right, I think there's probably some production people there then, setting up some stuff, setting up some lights. I think they're sort of having to move around. There's probably like four or five people there at the Cryptonomica just like checking out the exhibits. They want to see the Bigfoot video. You have like a display with the extended cut of the Bigfoot video going, which I think Barclay was kind of uncomfortable about, but it's bringing in the big bucks. You're getting set up. And Kirby looks really nervous. He's like, Ned, I know this thing's happening tonight. I don't know. I'm not much for like public speaking or being in front of the camera. So like,
oh, no. Do worry not, friend Kirby, because you're not going to be on camera. This is Ned's time. This is all about me.
Ned.
I am the host. Well, what?
Maybe you want the candelabras.
The magic candelabras or the regular candelabras?
I don't know what you mean. They're all regular candelabras.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I thought we talked about the gag where you're going to shoot fire out of your fingers.
Okay, I'll just put them somewhere.
Shoot fire out of her fingers? What are you talking about?
A stage magician. She's a stage magician.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I thought it would add to the pizzazz of the show.
Yeah, for sure.
That was what you just saw there was some really dope, like, hey, dad fucked up because now I'm going to burn him. That was Griffin. And then Griffin was like, here's a burn. And then dad was like, actually, twist, I got an answer ready for you. And Griffin's like, oh, shit.
Yep.
I've been reverse
and the
burn.
Burner become the burnie. Kirby says, what flick you got on the docket for tonight?
Ah, great one to start with. It's called Beast with a Million Eyes. Roger Corman directed it, 1955, starring the brilliant Paul Birch, and of course, the second Darren from Bewitched, Dick Sargent. So, it's got an all-star cast. It's about this family, and they're on a date farm, and aliens show up. It's really a piece of shit. people are going to love it. People are absolutely going to love it.
He says, yeah, it sounds like, I think it's a good idea. I think it's going to bring in business. But I got to tell you, Ned, I'm a little bit worried because we've been doing pretty well here for a bit. But the thing about Bigfoot, folks get kind of tired of these, you know, sightings after a little bit. You got to keep it fresh. So I don't know if we need to move forward with Operation Mothman or something, but I'm telling you because I see this at the Lamplighter all the time. You get a big scoop on a cryptid in town and people pay attention, but just for a little bit. So we need to do something if we're going to keep this momentum going.
Oh, listen, the Mothman plan, we definitely do this. This is just publicity, friend Kirby. This is just getting our brand, getting our name out there. I figured whatever we do with the Mothman, we kind of start unveiling it on the show.
Man. I like that.
Oh, we have exclusive. Yes, Aubrey.
Do you have more cobwebs?
Yes. Look over there behind the vat that has the giant floating brain in it, the fake brain.
Got it. Thank you.
I think in the middle of this sort of chaotic scene, the bell above the door rings and in walks a young man. You've lived here for a while. You probably, it's not a huge town. You recognize him as Calvin Owens, the captain of the local high school swim team. And he looks actually pretty shaken up. He sort of stops when he sees sort of the lights being put up and the decorations being put up. But he kind of shakes his head and he walks towards you and he says, hey, are you, you run this place, right? This like this monster museum.
Absolutely. Welcome to the Cryptonomica. When you stepped through that door, you stepped through the Arch of Doom. Here there be monsters, my friend. And what's your name?
I think whenever you deliver this spiel to people, they usually look kind of delighted. He looks like scared. Do you know Calvin or not? I don't know like how deep Ned's roots in this town.
Not by name. Okay. I mean he's a pretty big jock.
Yeah, sure.
Around
he
town.
He says, "My name's Calvin. I've been in town for a while. I've never been in here though. But I know that y'all know stuff about monsters." And what do you call them, cryptids here in town?
Cryptids, yes, yes.
So, like, what do you do?
Well, we investigate. There are a lot of monsters, a lot of cryptids. We call them bomb-bombs. We have a lot of bomb-bombs running through the woods here in Kepler. Yes, Aubrey.
Is bomb-bombs catching on?
Only with me.
Okay.
I'm the only one, apparently.
Calvin kind of puts his he does the Adventure Zone NPC symbol where he like pinches the bridge of his nose and kind of closes his eyes and he looks up at you and he says, this is the only place I could think to come to because y'all know about monsters and stuff. And so, well, I got a new one for you.
So, hey, if you're not familiar, which you should be if you listened last week, but maybe you didn't because that wasn't like a canonical Adventure Zone episode.
Everything we said in there was bullshit. No, it was real.
No, I just mean it wasn't like a narrative episode. I don't give a shit. Anyway, Max Fun Drive is here. It only happens once a year, Vern. And we come to you sort of hat in hand and say, hey, did you like the show? And then you say, yeah, I did. And we're like, well, could we have some money for it, for doing that and the show good for you? And you say, well, yeah, absolutely. Let me do that right this second. So you go to MaximumFun.org/donate, and you pick a donation level that works for you. And again, this is a precursor. We say this all the time. But if it's uncomfortable for you or, you know, you can't make it happen, we understand, it's a decision you got to make for yourself. And we don't want anybody to be put out. But if you can spare it, it sure helps. We have different donation levels. You can give, if you give just $5 a month, like if you can carve out just $5 a month, you are going to support the network, which is really what you're doing with these. You're not like buying stuff. You're supporting the shows that you like. And your money does go directly to the shows that you say you listen to. That's how the system works. So you're supporting us and the other Max Fun shows you enjoy directly. But if you can kick in $5 a month, you are gonna get.
Wait, what are you doing? This is Dad. This is Dad's great. This is like Dad's main.
Dad, walk us through the gifts, Dad.
Well, you get exclusive bonus content.
The voice.
And for $10 a month,
What do you get for $5 a month? Do $5 a month first, Daddy.
You get exclusive bonus content.
How much?
Yeah. I don't have that on the sheet in front of me.
It's like over 120 hours.
Over 120 hours. That's right. 120 hours all for you. $10 a month. You got
The 120 hours is for all the shows throughout the network.
All the shows throughout the network. They're all there at your very fingertips.
What did we do? Can you talk about what we did this year for the Max Fun Drive? Because it's very
good. This year, we did the Adventure Zone Elementary. And holy cow, did we have a great time pretending to be detectives and vampires.
What if I can spare a little bit more cash, Dad, and I can kick in $10 a month?
$10 a month? Wow. Well, I tell you what, if you're a Taz Amnesty fan, you're really going to dig that because we've got those beautiful enameled pins. That's right, enameled pins. And the Adventure Zone's enamel pin is Dr. Harris Bonkers. Check it out. Dr. Harris Bonkers. You love him. You know him. There's a little flame on him. It's really cute. Now, $20 a month, you get everything from $5 and you get everything from $10, but you get the Max Fun Family Cookbook. I'm telling you, this thing has recipes, everything from cocktails to desserts, everything in between, featuring recipes that, well, I believe we've contributed to, haven't we, fellas?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. $35 a month, you get a carafe. I know. It's perfect for putting juice in. It's perfect for any kind of fluids that are consumable.
Not lava. Now, Daddy, don't put lava in it.
Daddy, what's the difference between a carafe and a carafe?
Don't dunk on our dad. He's doing his best.
Long A, short A, my young friend. It's got a Max Fun Rocket logo on it. Now, get this. For $50
a month. We don't have to do all the levels.
What's up there?
I love this one. I never get to do 50.
I know, but we don't ask you. Just whatever.
It's a surprise. You got to go to MaximumFun.org/donate to check it out. And please do that right now. A lot of times you think, I'm definitely going to get to it. But, you know, you might forget the drive only goes for a couple more days. So If you would, if you enjoy our show, if you can spare some bucks, it really does mean a lot to us. It's allowed Dad to stop waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go work at the radio station.
I still do to pee.
Crazy. He drives to the radio station. If it's the only bathroom he feels comfortable in.
If we hit the 25,000 new and upgrading donor goal, our dad will stop peeing.
Forever.
Well, okay.
It's a lot of the flexibility to make stuff like this because of the drive and because of your support. We can justify spending the time to make the Adventure Zone, which, as Griffin will attest, it's a huge time investment, but we make it because people really like it, and you've shown that with your support. So please continue to show that support at MaximumFun.org/donate. Again, we only do this once a year, but we're able to do that because y'all really come out and do a great show of support every year for us, and we really appreciate it. So please take a second right now. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Get yourself a cool pin, a cookbook, a carafe, whatever you want, either one.
You have to choose between the carafe and carafe. There's like a slider.
There's two different options there.
And at some levels, the carafe. Mm-hmm.
There's a carafe if you donate a lot of money. Anyway, please do that right now. MaximumFun.org/donate.
So the three of you have reconvened at Amnesty Lodge with Calvin in tow. The lobby here is fairly quiet. There's just a few guests loitering about. Not guests, but residents, I guess, loitering about. They're all in their human disguise, sort of given their uncertainty about the outsider that has come in with you. And Calvin still seems pretty shaky as Barclay enters from the kitchen and hands the four of you each a cup of some strong-smelling cinnamon tea. And after taking a sip of his tea, Calvin says, "So, I don't really know what y'all's story is, but look, I'm not a big believer in all the monster stuff that some folks in this town are always talking about. Sorry, Ned. But I know what I saw last night."
"What did you see?"
I saw the pool that I've swum in every day. Swam in. I mean, I'm the captain of the pool team. You'd think I would know the past tense.
Say did laps.
Yeah. The pool I did laps in last night, it came alive. I don't know how to describe it because it's water and I've never seen water do that, but I gotta know. Was that real? Do monsters really exist here? And when he says that, I think Barclay like kind of locks eyes with Ned, because he knows that Ned is the biggest sort of loudmouth in this department, and is making a face at you like, don't do it.
You know, Calvin, was it?
Yeah.
No, listen, power of suggestion is very strong, but there's no such things as monsters. You don't have to worry about it.
Why don't you roll to investigate a mystery? That is plus sharp.
So it's a 7?
Okay. On a 7-9, hold 1. You get to ask one of the following questions. What happened here? What sort of creature is it? What can it do? What can hurt it? Where did it go? What was it going to do? And what is being concealed here?
Did he see where it went?
Probably not. I think so here's how this is going to work, because you're just having a conversation and this is for like hard details. I think he's going to tell you like what he saw.
Okay.
But if you want actual, again, remember, and if this is maybe the first episode of Amnesty you're listening to, the big thing for this game is gathering like hard intel on the monster that you are hunting, that you are going to have to use in battle, because the odds are usually stacked pretty heavily in the favor of the monsters. The only way to get an upper hand is to sort of gather intel and act on it. So I think he's going to tell you what he saw.
Okay.
But if you want something useful here, it's going to be the result of one of these questions.
Okay, so I'll hold on to the question and ask you when I need it. Also, because I'm a spell slinger, I have I have forensic divination, so when I successfully investigate a mystery, I also get to ask the question, what magic was done here, as a free extra question. That might be something that's better directed towards, like, Barclay.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, so the other thing about this is that the information can only come in the context of, like, what you're getting it from or who you're asking. Yeah. And so, like, Calvin's not a fucking wizard. Or is he? No, he's not. So I don't know how much. So I think that's a good impulse. He'll sort of tell you what happened, and then you can ask one of these questions for some hard intel, keeping in mind that like he only knows what he saw. So he says, all right, last night I snuck into the Kepler High pool, and I was doing some laps. We got the big meet coming up pretty soon. I was trying to get...
Big meet.
All right. I was trying to get, you know, tore up in my, you know, the swimming muscles, and I don't know, it was late, it was real dark, and I don't want to brag, but I'm a pretty fucking good swimmer, but something grabbed me, pulled me under, and I was under for a while. I was struggling under there for a bit, and I managed to break free of whatever had me, and you know, I had my eyes open down there. I didn't see nothing grabbing me, but I managed to get away. I swam, ran, got up towards the window. I snuck in through, and I was just about to hop out when I looked behind me, and y'all, I swear to God, the water of the pool started to lift up, like make a hill in the middle of the pool. When I sort of locked eyes with it, it didn't have eyes. When I looked over at it, it started to move over towards me, and then I made my flight and got out.
The mound of water, you're saying the mound of water rose up and actually moved.
That's what I saw.
And Calvin, just what did it seem like it was going to do? Did it, I mean, it pulled you under the water, but it seemed like it was intent on hurting you, yeah?
Is this your question? What was it going to do?
Yeah.
He says, I don't know, but it was moving towards me there at the end, and it tried to drown me. I think it was going to try and kill me. I didn't, you know, talk to it.
Calvin, would you excuse me for just one second?
And
cross over to Barclay. Hey, I don't know how this usually works, but does this sound like anything you recognize? Any kind of, I don't know, creature, spell? Is that a thing?
He kind of walks you over to, like, away from the place a little bit. I think he's a little nervous about having this conversation anywhere near Calvin. And he says,
I'm going to, we can wait till afterwards, but upon seeing this, like, I start talking to Calvin as well. I have some stuff I want to say to Calvin. So
okay, well,
that is happening concurrently to alleviate any concern of Calvin overhearing what they're talking about.
Okay. Barclay says, I mean, some sort of like unnatural thing trying to kill somebody. It's definitely an abomination. It's just like, it's like a couple days early, Aubrey. It shouldn't be here yet. We still have a couple days before it was supposed to show up. They've been acting a little more erratic and unpredictable over the last year or so. They've abided by certain rules for decades, but now they're starting to bend them. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's our mark.
Calvin, let me bend your ear for a second.
Yeah.
You know me, and you know, we've known each other a long time. I went to school with your dad, actually. So we you know that we're not sort of crime fighters or police officers or anything. I know the uniform can be a bit misleading, but what we do is, you know, you asked about us. We're kind of enthusiasts into this sort of cryptozoological world. You know, weird stuff happens here in Kepler, and because Ned's got his sort of interests and Audrey's got hers, and I you know, I'm interested in like creatures and stuff, and Audrey's interested in magic, and Ned likes to keep track of like how people make up monsters and stuff. They call them cryptids.
I'm not making this up.
Oh, no, I understand. What I'm telling you is we have weird stuff happens in Kepler, right? Like, that won't come as a surprise to you. We all know it. And but sometimes people who have ill intentions like to use that to try to cover up whatever, you know, dark stuff they want to get up to. So because we know about the sort of cryptozoological stuff, and we're interested in it. Sometimes we like to just help out and poke around, poke a few holes, and make it a little bit easier for the real heroes, you know, to kind of do their job. And because usually the you start to see it unravel pretty quickly once we start poking around. You know, it's somebody's using a shop vac, you know, to make stuff move or whatever. You know, people got all kinds of tricks.
So I think, but I think what would be cool here is if we did a roll. There's manipulate someone, and I think we can do this once you have given them a reason, tell them what you want them to do, and roll plus charm. I think what you're doing is trying to like assuage his fears, so he's not going to like poke into like what you all are doing.
Yes, exactly.
And the reason you're giving them is that, you know, it's all good here. There's no monsters. We're a
I'm
team
also
that's
trying to like lay down a cover.
Yeah, for sure.
He can tell other people in case, you know, he needs to.
I think roll plus charm, and I think the stakes here are Calvin's sort of continued interference into this thing.
Okay, roll plus charm. Aha, 9 plus 1. That's a 10.
Okay, then they do it.
Consider yourself manipulated.
They
Calvin.
Do it for the reason you give them. I think he just looks relieved, and he's like, all right, yeah, I was starting to think that it was a little silly. I don't know, maybe the Jets kicked on too hard, and there were it would make me feel a lot better if y'all would go, you know, look around, but I don't know. You seem like you're not full of shit on this, so I guess I'll drop it. And he looks. I think he looks for the first time since like you all have been talking to him. He looks like he's calmed down.
And listen, you don't need to go. Don't. We'll pass this all along to the Zeke and the boys over at the sheriff's office.
Fucking,
let us poke around into it, and we'll poke some holes in this whole, you know, water thing and find out what really is going on here. And, you know, how those guys don't like to lift a finger. So we'll kind of wrap it up in a nice little bow for them and drop it off at their office. My metaphor's gotten away from me.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know what I'm saying?
Mr. Keeper, are any of the accumulated residents of Sylvain there have a medical background?
No, I don't think so. I think, there's werewolves and vampires and a ghost, and so they have, like, magical backgrounds, but no, like, medical ones.
Well, I just wondered if it would behoove us to take a look at Calvin's ankle where he was grabbed.
Interesting.
I mean, it was the only physical contact that...
Yeah, and obviously none of us are going to have the expertise to, like, have any, derive anything from it, but...
Barkley might. Barkley, yeah.
Barclay. It's not Charles Barkley. He shows up in Arc 4.
I was thinking Barkley from the from Sesame Street.
Why don't you roll to investigate? Like, you could just do it, right? And that way we all sort of get a hand on the ball in this scene.
Okay. 8 plus what?
Sharp. Yeah.
Then that's a 10.
Is it? You have plus 2 sharp. Wow. Okay, on a 10, hold 2. So you get to ask 2 questions, and I think we sort of resolve this thing here with maybe what can it do, or...
What happened here?
What happened here, or something like that?
Listen, Calvin, I know it sounds a little weird, but I am quite an aquatic fan myself.
Like a swim fan, you might say.
I'm a swim fan. Wait, no.
I'm going to murder you.
I have a Michael Phelps poster in the Cryptonomicon in the back room. But could I maybe take a peek at your ankles? You know, a lot of power derives from the kid.
Hey, Dad, I just want to say thank you for making this as creepy as you possibly could
sure.
30 seconds. I really appreciate it.
I think you've seen him sort of walk favoring one of his legs. And sort of put it together like that, and he says, yes, and he rolls up his pant leg and props it up on the table, and you look at his ankle, and there is like a mark there. It's not like a handprint or anything like that. It's just sort of a red area, I guess, is the only way to describe it, that wraps around his whole ankle. And I think what you sort of glean from that is like, he was not necessarily grabbed by a hand necessarily.
My second question, you said you opened your eyes and you looked when you were under the water. Now, I realize you probably didn't see much, but did you see anything at all? I know chlorine, I know, kills me too, but did you see anything in the water at all?
Is this, what sort of creature is it?
Okay, I guess it's what happened here. I want to know what he saw.
if he saw anything.
Yeah, I think it's one of those two. This is the second question, so I guess it's six and one half dozen the other. He says, I didn't have my goggles on, unfortunately. I was taking a little breather when it grabbed me, but I don't know, Ned. It was pretty dark, and it was underwater. I didn't have my goggles on, and I'll tell you what, though. There's some moonlight coming in. Moon was real bright that night, and so like that was sort of what I was swimming by. But when I was under there, I feel like I saw like a different light, like not moonlight. It was kind of, I saw it for like a millisecond, but so this ain't gospel, but it was like yellow light under there.
Like
I thought,
like bioluminescence, phosphorescence.
No, just like a, not like a, you know, there wasn't no, I wasn't grabbed by an electric eel or anything like that. It was just, I thought somebody had changed the pool lights out and put in some different bulbs or something, but the lights were out, but there was some sort of yellow light under there. I don't know. That's what I saw.
Damn you, Sinestro.
That's such a dorky joke. I love it.
And I think with that, I think Calvin says, so y'all are going to look into this, right? I feel a lot better just knowing that, like, the meet's coming up in 4 days. I don't want folks, you know, getting pulled under or killed by some sort of living pool or something while the competition's taking place. So if y'all would look into it, it would really help me sleep a bit better tonight.
Right, yeah, absolutely. The chicaners will be on the case.
And now I'm still not sure about that one. The chicaners. Nah, it's just us three people gonna go check it out. Yeah,
we're the chicaners.
We don't even really have a team name, Calvin.
Well, but chicaners, it would be cool.
The chicaners, or get them just
on
three
a get them on a jacket.
Well,
three chicaners.
I already have a jacket, and well, we may add other people, or one of us might beef it, so we don't want to hang our hat on the number of people. And also, we are just three regular people who look.
Yeah, but for spring, you know, something lighter, interest. Like a windbreaker kind of thing.
I got that too. The forestry department issues that to me, so I'm kind of covered on the jacket front. Pretty much any thickness or lining, I'm pretty well covered.
Hoodies, maybe hoodies.
I'm not a fan of because of the hat, you see.
Ah, right.
Yeah. So for right now, we're just going to go with three
people
who are looking into it. Calvin, thanks so much. I'm assuming you've left room at this point.
Real quick, you mentioned jackets, and I think you all have received a Pine Guard patch.
Not make the jackets
canonical. No, I know, but the jackets, you all have a Pine Guard patch at this point that you're supposed to sort of fasten to the inside of your jacket.
Does it have to be inside?
Yes, it's like a secret thing. You don't want to go around saying I'm a part of a team of monster hunters. I think maybe if you put it on the outside the first time, like Barclay saw you, he was like, "What do you know? Inside goes inside for secrets."
Dux is in his wallet because he doesn't know how to sew.
Okay,
and I will say Aubrey's just like safety pinned hers into the inside of her vest.
Love it.
I've got mine in a. I'm gonna get a tattoo of it.
Okay. Do you have it on your person also, in addition to your tattoo? And also, you don't have it yet, but you're gonna get around to it.
Yeah, I've got it, but it's been really busy.
Yeah, with
the Cryptonomica.
Okay. Yeah, I think Calvin, after this great dialogue, stands up and he says, "All right, I got to head out. Actually, it's my brother's birthday, and I actually snuck out of the house to come here as is. But maybe we can circle back.
Tell
sometime
us about
before
your brother.
He's a doofus, but maybe we can circle back before the swim meet, and I can find out what y'all found out."
Tell me Calvin's last name is Hobbs.
It's Owens.
Crap.
Named after listener, Calvin Owens. Thank you for tweeting about the show. He asks if you can circle back up before the meet.
Yes.
It's a problem when any one of the three of us can answer. Mm-hmm. He's kind of gets in this weird, like, well, I know if I say it now, it's like this math you do where, like, with each second that passes, the likelihood of someone else answering becomes higher, so you don't want to, like, step on anybody, so we just fall into a circle of not being able to answer. Yes, we will. No problem.
And Calvin stands up and leaves Amnesty Lodge. And with that, I think Barclay walks over to the seat he was sitting in and sits down, and he says, All right. I guess it's a work day. We should probably start our investigation. If this thing showed up, we can assume the clock starts then. We got about a week before it's able to leave Kepler, and so we need to find out what it is and take it down before it does. So I gotta stay here because I
could. You make us some lunches?
Yeah, of course I make you some lunches. That's my jam. But you know, Mom ain't back yet, and so I gotta hold down the fort here. Are you three good to? I don't know how well you've been keeping up with your practice and stuff, Fabri. I know you've been going out back and we've been shooting some fire at some shit. But y'all feel all right about tackling this one on your own?
Sure.
Go to a swimming pool. Yeah.
I just got one question. One of my partners has a real heavy stick that he clobbers stuff with. I got a sword, and my other partner shoots fire out of her hands. How the hell do we fight water?
Duck, I don't know. That's the job. One of the tricky things about this gig is we don't get repeats. There's not a lot of sort of institutional knowledge that comes into play here. I've never seen a water monster come through, so you're going to have to figure that out on your own. But I think a good place to start is maybe heading to the scene of the attack last night and seeing what you can find out there. Obviously, be careful. You don't want to fight it until we know how to kill it. And for God's sake, whatever you do, don't get in the water. But I think if you head to the pool and see what you can see, it might be a sort of good place to, good launch pad.
All right.
And he stands up, and I think he picks up the empty cups of tea and puts them on a tray, and he says, "And listen, I appreciate you not telling Calvin the truth of the matter, and you gotta keep this stuff secret, Ned. It is so important. I mean, it's to all of you, but I'm talking to Ned specifically here because he can't seem to, shut up about it. It's, humans have a long history of freaking the hell out when they find out about Sylvain, and that usually ends with them coming over and causing a ruckus. The night that you three found out, that was an anomaly. It is of the utmost importance that nobody else gets clued in, okay?
My friend, discretion is my middle name.
I thought your middle name was fucking.
Ned fucking Discretion Chicane. That's me, Junior.
And I think with that, the door to Amnesty Lodge opens and shuts, and a man walks in, a tall, sort of handsome, very neatly dressed man walks in. He's wearing a suit and kind of eyes the place over. And sort of nods at one of the guests with a kind of friendly demeanor. And he walks over to the four of you and he introduces himself. He says, "I'm looking for Ned Chicane, proprietor of the Cryptonomica. I was told by his associate Kirby I could find him here."
"Hmm. What do you need jolly old Ned for?"
I think he sees you, Ned, and just like deduces, "Oh, that's Ned."
"Damn.
Mr. Chicane, my name is Agent Stern, FBI. At your earliest convenience, sir, I would just love to see your Bigfoot video."
So that's going to do it for us this week. Travis went to go throw up.
Travis so is very sick. He recorded this episode very sick, and we're all very proud of him.
He
was able to fight. He was able to fight through it for you, the listener.
And what are you going to do for Travis? Well, luckily you can do something. You can go to MaximumFun.org/donate and really thank Travis for Travis.
Yeah, we really appreciate all the support that you all have given us, especially during the experimental arcs where we're trying out some new stuff and trying to find our footing for season two. And we hope that you enjoy it. And this is a really great time of year to show your support of our show, try to help us meet our goal of 25,000 new and upgrading members. You can help us get there by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. And again, you're going to get those cool gifts. You're going to get the feeling of satisfaction knowing that you have helped keep this show afloat by supporting it in a very, very direct way. It means the world to us. If you have the means, please consider going to donate at MaximumFun.org/donate.
And there are a lot of different levels for you to choose from. You know, just pick the one that fits for you. And it's a really easy process, too. It doesn't take much time, doesn't take a lot of effort. It really is very simple.
So that's it for this week. We will be back next week with another episode. That will be April. What day is that going to be? April 19th will be another episode, and then that'll get us back on schedule, and then we are going to kick it back to bi-weekly so that I can stop being so anxious all the time. So new episode next week, April 19th, live show this weekend, Friday, Dallas.
Yeah.
We'll see you real soon.
Hey, also, this is my Mimbam, but Houston, can you please come to our show, Houston?
Yeah,
please?
MacRoyShows.com/tours. Houston, hey, Houston, can you come see the show? But yeah, we'll see you soon and talk to you next week. And bye.
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 MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.